The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15, or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
And welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and joining me, guest Charlie's, returning guest Charlie's, Cam and Alexi from the Total Rude Bot podcast, where they every week get a different sex robot, test it out, and review it.
Yes.
And you know what? Our listenership is growing. It was a very niche community when we launched it 5 years ago, but now in pandemic times, there's a lot of
and a lot of people wanting to find out what's the best rude bot you can absolutely root, dude.
If you're gonna get a rude bot, I want like not. I don't just want to go to one of those pages where you're like, oh, you know, you Google like what are the best top five rude bots, like you know, and then it's obviously been sponsored by some company that makes rude bots, and you're not getting independent information. I want like you guys to be the Chapo Trap House of rude bots. Like,
we make no money from advertising. We make absolutely no money. We do this for the joy and our belief that rude bots are the future. Okay, that's what we're banking on.
And we don't even get any free products. We're spending so much money weekly
on rude bots,
buying these little things that'll suck you off and like pop up your butt and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, we do share. We share them. So
yeah, that's true.
Do you swap order each week, or is there a
we do? We do alternating reviews where we get one, pass it on.
So okay, tell me this. I'm not suggesting that you have to nominate whether you would ever have sex with a rude bot or not, but let's just say you live in a world where you have a rude bot review podcast.
Yeah.
How much?
This is all true. This is the universe we're now living in.
How much would you be willing to spend out of your budget that you're making? Like, how much would you have to make on Patreon or whatever a week to spend on rude bots?
I think about this a bit, you know, because like, I don't have one. I don't have any like automatic sex toys in my house. But I think if I was a single man living in today's day, I would. I think I would buy one of those ones that pumps, you put a fleshlight into it, you freeload it, and it sort of like, it jacks you off or sucks you off or whatever. I think I would buy one. And I've looked at the pricing and we're talking like $600, $700. For one of those babies. So I think my limit is around...
So like the fleshlight, can I say this? So the whole idea of the fleshlight, for people who don't know, it's a male masturbation tool. And it's called a fleshlight because it comes disguised cunningly as a flashlight. It's a clever... Yeah. It's a, you've got to admire both the fact that they came up with it and the excellent play on words.
I think they had the name first.
Yeah, totally.
It was someone sent an email with a misspelling. They're like, hang on a second, here's my eureka moment.
I like to think that there were rejected like versions of that. There was like, you know, the recycling bin or the compost compartment. Like, so... Okay, if you've got a sex robot, is there going to be a similar disguise is what I'm saying? Because, like, are you going to leave your sex robot around the house, or are they going to kind of disguise it as something else?
There's nothing, like, it's the perfect disguise, isn't it? The fleshlight. You know, if someone's going to walk in your
until
room,
there's a blackout.
Like, hey, look, I'm just fucking my torch. There's not, it's not a fleshlight. I've just got the Mac torch on my dick, that's all.
Yeah, is it like a CPR doll that's just got like a little bum hole or something on the other side? And it's like, just training to save some lives, you know. Just don't come in. I'm going to be practicing some CPR.
While we're talking right now, I've Googled this thing, the fleshlight launch, and it couldn't possibly be disguised as anything other than what it is. It's huge. It looks like a kitchen appliance.
Okay, well, here's one. I'm going to give you like a story I have not told previously on this podcast.
Wow, we're getting the scoop.
When I was in LA doing comedy, the owner or the, I don't know, like somebody who was high up at Fleshlight, in the Fleshlight industry, was at one of my gigs and was particularly taken you know, by my material, and got my number from somebody, got my details from somebody, so they could send me a case of fleshlights. So
a case?
Yeah, there was like three or four different fleshlights in the case. Like
I thought you meant like a case of beers with this 24 in yeah.
it. Time for a frothy.
They just all lined up like the cans in a six pack.
No, it was like four, I reckon.
Yeah.
I think okay. there were four, like you kind of standard fleshlight, and then there was right. like kind of more like a pocket fleshlight. And I think there might have been like a bottom hole fleshlight.
Oh my mm-hmm. lord!
Yeah. So yeah, it was like a range of different fleshlights.
Was there a mouth?
Oh yeah, maybe there was a mouth. You're right. I reckon there was a mouth, a bum, and two different sized vaginas. The whole range, in case you're having a formal night and you've got to get out the good cutlery. Like, you know, like normally it's good enough to just, you know, eat with a knife and fork, maybe a spoon. But if you've got fancy company over, and you've got to start with a little fleshlight before you move your way into the big one. That's how you set the
table.
It's
like a little Tupperware party that you can throw.
It's like a dessert fork.
Yeah.
That one on the outside.
We got the Whitlam sampler. Everybody, let's have a little taste. What do you prefer?
I got the mouth fleshlight, but I just kiss it.
Yeah.
That's all I use. So hang on. Go back to this story. You got given four free fleshlights.
Yeah, four. So, four different fleshlights. So, So I will say that I did. I mean, you got to fucking try it. Like, it's been sent to your house.
It
possibly
killed the cat, but it also made its life a little happier for about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah, here's what I will say is too much effort for me is what I would say.
That's like, I've heard that.
I just feel like that is a job that is already being done efficiently. And no complaints. Fine.
Yeah,
I've
absolutely.
Worked out a way that works. Really, to be honest, put more 10,000 hours Malcolm, Gladwell style into developing how that works than fine tuning anything in my comedy career. So I don't really need to now get in an external fucking contraption to help me with something that I've nailed.
It does seem like too much effort, because from what I've seen, you have to take the fleshy bit out and heat it up separately.
My lord, and then, even this conversation is rewiring my DNA right now. This is unbelievable to me.
Just, can you imagine, I mean, I don't know, maybe when you're 17, I could stay horny for the length it takes to heat up a fucking fleshy thing and then put it back into a casing and then jack off. But now at 33, the moment I'm pulling this, like the sticky, fleshy substance out of the casing, I'd be like, ugh, forget this.
Oh, my God. Mate, this is too much like a Cronenberg creation. Like, this is existence. This is like Videodrome to me hearing these things.
I literally am too lazy to grab my actual flashlight when I go outside at night and like with the dogs. I just use like the torch on my phone. The idea that somehow I'm just like, oh, well, here we go. I'm going to treat myself right. Book out an hour in my calendar, because you haven't even got to the worst bit about this is that, yes, there is some like preparation time, you know, but it's post time that's your real.
My lord.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's the conundrum.
Cleaning involved in this, which is, I mean, I think.
Disgusting.
I think they're all one use, would be my suggestion. I feel like everyone always thinks it's a good idea, does it once and says, I'm not cleaning this up. No, this is going in the bin.
Of course.
It would be truly like an existential just moment. Like, you would be distracted by going like, God, what is my life? Where I've become? What is this? It just, you know, it would just awaken too many different feelings for me, and none of them will channel into the feelings of arousal whatsoever.
Okay, so if there's a step then where the fleshlight is inserted into a rude bot, Cam's going to pay $1,000. About $1,000. No more than $1,000. Alexi, same question.
Well, I'll borrow Cam's, test it out, and make my decision from there. I'm a try before you buy kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you only do oral on it as well? Really?
Yeah, if it's got arms to snuggle with, that's all I need. That's what I really need is the touch of a good bot.
You just talk to it.
Got to ring up the company and go, why is it just vaginas and buttholes? Yeah. Just, I want some fleshy arms I can wrap around me at night and cuddle.
Can you guys chuck a personality and I'll load up some of the podcasts that Cameron and I have done? Just wanted to sound like Cam. I haven't seen him in like 3 months. Just me sitting across it with like microphone set up.
Yeah, okay. Well, how about this? Here's a question I'm going to ask about if you're loading it up with the podcast. Some AI company comes to you and they're going, we are going into the Roodbot business. We're making male Roodbots now, but we need them to have distinct personalities, and we've identified the best way for our AI to get an insight into someone's personality is to hear as much of them talking as possible. And so we're going to podcasters first because there's just so much information that we can immediately feed into these machines to come up with these fully formed personalities. Are you too willing to have your podcast? So what would be the number? How much money would they have to offer you to insert your personalities into male Roodbots?
Well, I'd assume that they would have already gone through, you know, you and a few other podcasters ahead of us.
Yeah, we probably already own the Justin Hamilton Roodbot. Sit down and watch Indiana Jones with it.
Yeah, I don't know how deep down the podcast list it would take before we finally get the offer. But so we would have seen a few of the bugs and all that stuff. I reckon we'd be getting offered less than you, to be honest. So I'd probably do it for the exposure.
To get the word about Total Reboot out there from the aptly named Roodbot. Because that's what we really want. We want that market of guys that want to have sex with us listening to our podcast.
And we hope there's a few out there. Well, this, you know, this whole thing, it opens up a real Westworld conundrum in my head. Once we start talking about sex robots that have personalities and that are AI, Do they have autonomy? Do they have choice? Are they now slaves? And this is where I get uncomfortable. I'm more happy to just fuck a torch or whatever the fuck.
One of those ones that just an ass. It's just a descended ass.
I mean, that to me is like, you've got to be very confident you're never having a pop in from a neighbor.
Yeah.
To have one of those in your house. Like, it would be like whatever that fucking famous story about the ticking clock under the floorboards, you know,
Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah. So that's my version of that. If I knew that I had one of those just asses that they sell separately.
He does have to be like, it's a honey glazed ham, I promise. That's what's just sitting there. I was eating a honey glazed ham in bed.
Well, that's the nightmare, is that you have kids or something and then you die and the kids are going through, cleaning out your shit and they're finding all these memories of you and then they just find a full ass and some legs and nothing else. And they just have to deal with that. Have you seen them? They're fucking crazy. They've got legs. Oh man, I wish I was a sex toy guy. It would just be, it's all so funny to me.
I mean, not I'm to so kink shame anyone, I'm glad that people are able to. I'm just saying, from my point of view, I would find it hard to know that that was in my house.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would find myself living a much more careful and risk-free life, I think, based on the idea.
You're just constantly sweating. You just have always got a degree. You're 3 degrees hotter all the time, just knowing, oh, God, something's up. Something's going to happen.
Well, you know, there's that. All allegedly, of course, because this podcast cannot be afforded to be sued by Ben Robert Smith. But there is allegations in the Ben Robert Smith case that he had, like, all these, you know, computer files and whatever buried in his backyard that, you know, sort of if shit goes down, you got to destroy these. The only way that I could have one of those rubber asses in my house is if it was...
You've got a friend.
...buried in my backyard. No, that I'd have to get it from the backyard every time and rebury it. Oh, every time out. I would have to rebury it. I would have to pat it down. And because that, then I would really know...
Sprinkling loose
...that I needed it if I got out the shovel.
He spends a lot of time in the backyard. I don't know what he's doing there.
Just hide it inside a cabbage in a cabbage patch so you have to open it up, pull the leaves back. That's how they should hire them. They should come inside a silicone cabbage.
Are you suggesting it's some sort of Cabbage Patch doll, Alexi?
Yeah, or a cauliflower, any kind of root vegetable. And that's what we call them. We call them root vegetables.
Maybe there should be a service that is just you let a group of people know and they're like black ops. And they will get a text or a beeper will go off when you die and they'll know to come around and destroy a case in your backyard or like clear your search history or whatever.
I honestly think this is a good idea for a business.
It's a pretty fucking good idea.
Yeah.
You just see guys with like these little wrist bands on them that like tap into like their heart rate and stuff and you go, yeah, that guy's a masturbator. Just seeing them with their little armband on, yeah, it's a masturbator right there.
But if there was some company that you could give, because it's not, I mean, yes, maybe it's a bit harder to get the keys to the house in case of emergency and get around there to, you know, dig up the fake plastic ass from the backyard. But like for emails or messages or like, you know, if there was some company where you were just like, well, here's all, you get a message when I die and then like, here are all my email passwords. Please go in and erase anything that would embarrass anybody.
I think that's fucking great. It's like this whole John Wick universe where these people, I'm imagining like a Swiss bank, like you can go there and it's all marble and you like put a key into a little lockbox and that's a hard drive with all your incriminating data on it and they can just fucking destroy it. I actually think this is a cool idea. They're black ops trained. They're being paid very well and they have access to everything and they can just destroy it all to keep your memory pure.
It's good, actually. You know, that's actually good. You know what it'd be good for? It'd be good for a pitch for one of those sort of Equalizer style franchises, like where somebody used to be, you know who that is. They were the eraser, you know, but they've erased themselves. That's the premise, right? They used to be the world's greatest eraser. They would go in when shit went down. They would clean it all up, but now they've managed to erase themselves. Nobody knows where they live. They're living this normal life and then some crime or injustice takes place that they have to get back into the erasing game.
That's actually a fucking great idea. Yeah.
We could make a couple of beans off this thing. Yeah. Just the three of us going out there finding dead dudes, deleting their history, and taking just their credit card.
I mean, I think everybody now, because of the way the internet works, right, and the fact that, you know, we have access to all these things, there wouldn't be a person who's online who does not have something that they would love for other people not to find out about. So I think there would be a demand for the product.
I was thinking about this recently that I reckon we're 5 years off a politician having their nudes leaked and it not being a big deal. You know, a politician being like, yeah, so what? They're my nudes. I sent them, you know, 5 years ago to a guy that I was dating.
I think,
and then that's just going to be the norm.
I think if it was appropriate, like as in like the relationship was appropriate, I don't think that would be a scandal now. I actually think that people would have sympathy for the politician. I think that's where we're at now, where people would be like, it is a disgrace that somebody has leaked their nudes. If they're sending consensual nudes to someone, I reckon we're already there.
Do you think that if Anthony Weiner had a different name, he would be president now?
Yeah. Or if he just lent into it. Yeah. That was his problem.
Oh, my God.
His problem is, like, if it was Trump, if that had happened to Trump, he just would have fucking rolled with it. He'd be like, yeah, I did. You want to see my dick now? It's great.
Yeah.
I have the best dick in the entire world. It is definitely better than every Chinese dick I have ever seen.
Have you guys seen the Wiener documentary?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you seen it, Will?
Yes, I have seen it.
Oh, man. It's fucking sensational. I think you're right because that movie spent so much time making me realize that he was basically the prodigal son.
Yeah.
He's Bernie Sanders. He was like kind of the white Obama. Is this fucking cool dude? But then it's just an hour and a half of watching him be obsessed with showing his dick to strangers. Yeah. Can't shake it.
I mean, that is like such a weird obsession. Like, I mean, it obviously has affected our community. You know, Louis C.K. clearly loved showing his dick to people and then touching it. And that's not appropriate, Louis. Like, fucking got some good specials, man. But could you stop showing your dick to people?
Great specials, bad special interests.
Yeah. Oh, man. So what's been going on in lockdown, boys? Like, I wanted to talk to you. You're in the middle of a Sydney lockdown at the moment, both in separate places. So give me a sense of what the lockdown experience is like for you.
I, as everybody knows, I am a big movie buff. Alexei Toliopoulos, number one movie guy this side of town. And I'll be honest, I've hit a wall. Like last week, I was telling Cam, I was like, I have no idea what to watch anymore. And I'm fully aware that I'm saying this to you through my computer sitting in front of what looks like 2,000 Blu-rays behind me. And yeah. I just hit the wall not knowing at all what to watch. And then knowing that I'm not going to be anytime soon have new things, I'm spinning out.
How many Blu-rays do you have? Because that is like we're looking at a wall behind you. It looks like, and I've seen it many times before because we Zoom almost every day. But it does look like a store. Like it looks like you have thousands. What's the number?
It is around 2,000.
Jesus. Far out. I have that many fleshlights in my house.
Have you watched every one of those Blu-rays? Is there anything on your shelf that you haven't watched that you bought but you've just actually never watched?
A lot. There's a lot in there. Like I would
What's
say
the number?
It would be hundreds.
Hundreds that you haven't watched?
Yeah. Minimum 100, I would say, there's that I've got behind me that I've not seen. I'm talking minimum 100.
What I enjoy about this is that you've started this story with, I've run out of things to watch. I don't know what to watch. And yet you literally have 100 things that you purchase. Yeah. They're not just on your Netflix or your Stan. They literally are sitting on your shelf that you're like, yeah, but not that. What a tease for that movie to feel so loved at the start. And then so this is like a dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah. It's also, I think, I've only had the desire to watch Beverly Hills Cop and there's only three of them and then hundreds of other movies. I'm like,
and
no.
Only one of them's good.
Only one of them's good. One of them's horrendous and one of them's kind of okay.
So, well, hang on. Have you got like a database of everything there or is it just all unorganized?
It's a database and it's alphabetized.
Why don't you just go through and just pick the ones you haven't watched and just watch them? You know, you've got the time.
The answer is quite simple, Cameron. It's because it doesn't have Eddie Murphy putting a banana into an exhaust pipe in them. Behind me, there's only one movie that has that in the criteria.
Yeah.
And the rest don't. Some of them only have Eddie Murphy playing three or four characters.
That's so funny. I actually, the other day, I watched Fletch for the first time in ages. Mm. And then it finished and I was like, God, I wish there was more Fletch. And then I remembered there is a sequel to Fletch.
Yep.
And instead I decided to just watch Fletch again.
Which is a good choice because I was obsessed with Fletch. With Fletch.
With Fleshlights. By the way, buy Fletch.
We're back to it. With Roodbots and Fleshlights. It's the plot of Fletch, but it's now called Flesh.
It's just Fletch Chevy lies. Chase.
Okay, so you love I love Fletch. It's so good.
I sadly sometimes think that when I was a kid in the country and I decided I wanted to do journalism, I thought that I was going to be more like a Fletch style character was going to go undercover and like work out stories by having all these like secret identities and shit. But I then read the books. Have you ever read any of the books?
I'm actually reading the first one now.
So remarkably different. Like is certainly the character.
Still good.
Yeah, still good, but just in a different way. Like Chevy Chase looks nothing like. I imagine if you were like a lover of Fletch before the movie came out and then they cast Chevy Chase, it would have been one of those Fletch fans would have been up in arms if it had been the days of the internet.
When you're going back and reading it now, Cameron, you just have to, like, every time they describe him, just look at Chevy Chase instead. Or read a description of him in, like, People magazine with, like, slightly balding, funny man, Chevy Chase.
So the first one's great, though. Well, when I was a kid, the first one was great. I have not watched it in 20 years. Is it still great or is it terrible?
It holds up, man. It's so good. Chevy is hilarious.
Yeah.
The story is great. I'm a sucker for just any kind of like dipshit detective story.
Yeah.
Any fucking like smart ass idiot guy who's on a mission. I love it. I reckon it's as good as Beverly Hills Cop.
Really?
I put them together as like great fucking 80s comedies.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fletch Lives sucks ass.
Yeah. It's fucking
lame, and it's set on a plantation for some reason.
Oh my god, that's where I want to see Chevy. We got to see Chevy on a plantation.
Yeah, you it's know crazy, what would be funny guys. Really based on whatever characters Chevy had left, I think was basically else can you do? He's like, I don't know, maybe a plantation owner.
Well, there's
these
one character
have been bubbling up for a while.
There's one character that never let me play on SNL. I think I could bring it out now.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Anyway, yeah, so I've been watching that. That's the main thing I've been doing, and reading the books as well, and doing my own little detective work on the internet. And I read a really cool fact today I want to share with you guys.
Wow, okay.
Because I've been reading about the billionaire space race that's been going on over the last month or so, you know, with all our fucking hot, cool billionaires that have decided to spend all their money on space tourism.
Jeffrey Bezos and Richard Branson, not Bill Gates. Yep,
and
Bill Gates is
and Elon.
Oh yeah, Elon, of course.
Elon Musk. And I went down a little a rabbit hole.
Is that how you say his name?
I don't know.
No,
I think I've only ever read
it. It's absolutely not how you say his name.
Elon Musk. But Elon Musk. Have some respect. The guy's
he's a freaking moose dude, okay?
He's one of our great geniuses. So I was reading about early research into space tourism and the Space Shuttle Challenger, which you guys may remember as a spaceship that exploded in 1986.
Yep.
That was an attempt at space tourism. Did you know that Big Bird from Sesame Street was supposed to be on that spaceship?
Oh my god, like the costume or the puppeteer?
Both.
Oh my god.
As part of like a publicity coup, NASA said, "You know what would be great and we'll get all the kids watching is if we get Carol Spinney as Big Bird to board the Challenger and like take off into space with everybody, but scheduling like didn't let him do it." Imagine that. Big Bird.
Oh my god. I'm flabbergasted right now.
Okay, so if Big Bird was on Challenger, and so Big Bird, like it explodes and Big Bird dies.
Oh yeah.
Do they tell the children? Like is there, like how, because that's one of those moments where like do they just replace Big Bird? Is it like when like a pet dies and the parents just go, we'll just get a turtle that looks the same and we'll say their pet didn't die. Do they replace Big Bird? Or is there some sort of real world mourning of Big Bird? Like, do all adults have to keep that secret so that we don't break the hearts of children?
I think if they went ahead with it, they would have to, like, have a memorial service, because if it was part of, like, to get kids interested in space, there would be hype going like, oh, you know, Big Bird, that Big Bird from, like, the streets of Sesame, he's going up there. He's going up into space. So the kids would all be watching because they're like, I'm going to see finally a bird fly. And then there would be more kids that would have watched it.
But would there be like an element where we just go, oh, no, Big Bird got off at the last moment. He got a call from Mr. Snuffleupagus and he had to go and take that.
Yeah, would they address it on Sesame Street? I think that they'd have to fake some footage of
him flying out.
Him flying
wings extended. And just
right
landing.
Right before it explodes.
And just a couple of singed feathers. And then and completely different voice. Well, that's only made out there, okay?
You know what I would love too is there's been so many television shows and movies made about the Challenger disaster that if they constantly had to make these quite serious movies but cast Big Bird and always have Big Bird as part of it.
Like Ryan Murphy's American Crime Story on this, and there's just Big Bird as one of the main characters.
Oh, fuck. See, we missed out on that. That would have been amazing. It would have been such a great part of history.
It feels to me like Big Bird knew something, right? You're saying Big Bird pulled out at the last moment and then Challenger blew up. I think maybe you've got a sequel to your, you know, Finding Drago podcast here, like framing Big Bird. What did Big Bird know about what was going to go down?
You've got some NASA investigators going like, there's some little bird seed hanging around the launch pad around here.
That's been my favorite fact that I've learned. I think sensational shit.
Do you think that when they were launching off, would Big Bird, like, in the cockpit, would Carol Spinney be in costume? Like, when they're...
But I mean,
their arm would
get into the
everyone's like strapped in, and then they've just got one arm raised above their head inside a costume, puppeteering some eyes and a beak.
I like the idea too that, like, if it had been successful, that he always has to be Big Bird. Mm. Like, there's not a moment, even when he's up there, that he's allowed to detach and just leave the costume in the corner and
just
float
in
around
zero gravity. Being the everyone's like fiddling with the dials and doing all the jobs that they have to do in space, and he's going like, "Today is brought to you by the letter B for black hole."
I mean, would you have thought that if they couldn't get Big Bird, but they wanted that appeal, could they not have got the count to do the countdown to launch?
Wow.
Okay, yeah. That's great. That's great stuff right there. Yes, yes, they should have got the counts. They should have put in, it should have been all Sesame Street, and they should have all perished in that fucking tragedy.
I mean, it would be easier to explain, like, yeah, you know, no one was qualified. Everyone had like a grade 3 reading level that was involved in this. The smartest guys that we had on the team were Bunsen and Honeydew, okay? We didn't do so well.
They're the scientists. You always hear that shot of NASA. You know, the guys on the headphones in that office.
Houston.
You just start seeing, so like, they're like, Houston, we have a problem.
Oh, God. Would you go up, Will, if you had the cash lying around? Would you go in one of the, like in Bezos's trip or in Richard Branson's one?
I mean, okay, so the real answer is I have no particular desire to do that. But I guess if the opportunity arose, like, you know, they were like, no, we really... You know, for whatever fucking reason, I don't know, whatever the reason is. Like,
we're going to need some laughs up there, mate.
Right, it's a corporate now, is it? I have to fucking work as well.
I'm going to write some jokes about virgins.
All right, what have I got? You know, the outside of this looks like a dick. We could work with that, I suppose.
In space, no one can hear you fart. Yeah.
You guys heard of Big Bird? I got some stuff on that.
To do the first 20 in space, that would be...
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, okay. Maybe that's it. They say, you know, like, we've sent music into space. We've sent, like, art and entertainment into space. We actually want to do the first ever comedy gig in space. And and we want to book you to do the first comedy gig in space. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah, if I can claim it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the first open mic in space. Yeah. Just get some real crazy stuff going.
Yeah, I bring up an opener, but I make, like, Justin come in a separate rocket.
That's so funny. You're not even the first one to do it because you had to bring on an opening act.
I mean,
I don't want to go on cold.
Yeah. I still was the first person to kill in space, you know, so they just got him ready.
Would you go, Cam?
Oh, man. You know, I've always thought I was one of those guys who would do everything. Yeah. Like, I'd bungee jump, I'd jump out of a plane. And now I just think, you know, heading into my mid-30s, I just don't think so. Not anymore. I hate being on a normal plane.
Yeah.
I hate going through airport security. I don't care about it. I just reckon I'm happy to just sit on the sidelines and watch people do this shit. But I would watch Alexi do it.
Alexi, would you do it?
I guess so. The encouragement from my best friend gave me the courage to do it. I was no until that moment, and then Cameron believing in me sent me. I just started imagining floating around, annoying everyone up in the little capsule.
What do you think that if we had to start a new colony? So this is the other question, right? So they're putting together like a little space colony. They're going off to like, you know, put a colony on Mars or something like that. And they want to take a selection of people from different industries, and they come to you and they say, you know, on this space shuttle we're sending up, we like, you need an entertainer. This is going to be your part in the new community, but you're going to have a range of other skills as well, because we just don't have enough people to cover off everything. So you can't just be an entertainer. You're going to have to double up serving some other purpose to the colony. What is your other purpose?
Right. So it's like Armageddon, where they're like training training drillers to be astronauts. Yeah.
The greatest premise ever of a movie, that it is easier to train drill guys to be astronauts than it would be to train astronauts to operate drills.
Have you ever seen Ben Affleck's like commentary for that?
Yeah, it's I've seen that.
The greatest commentary.
Every now and then that floats around on the internet. It's so fucking good.
You could just hear him having some beers, talking over that scene. He goes, yeah, so I asked Bay, like, why don't we get the astronauts and teach them how to drill? And he's like, shut the fuck up, man.
So true. What would my other skill be? Jesus Christ. You know, because it's like we are the least relevant people in starting society over and over again. You know, I often think about that. If there was a zombie apocalypse and I was in a walking dead group of people, what would my job be? And you think I'd be the storyteller. Yeah. I'd be the one that like writes everything down and mythologizes everyone. But end of the day, I'd probably just... fucking, I don't know. I'd do manual labor. I'd go up there and be like, oh, I'll dig a trench, whatever. Give me a shovel. Teach me to drill. Yeah. Apparently it's very difficult, but if you teach me how to drill, I'll figure out how to dig a trench or something.
I'd probably go around and give back rubs and stuff.
Just be the creep.
Yeah. Just go around, massage people. It's like, hey, how you doing? Need a little extra here? Looking a bit tense, man. Just make people like me.
I feel like growing food would be my... like, I don't... I have a farm background, but I wouldn't suggest that I have any particular knowledge when it comes to, like, growing vegetables and stuff. But it feels like something that I could pick up. And you get a lot of alone time. You get first access to food.
Yeah.
Feels like about bits. Yeah. It's good, yeah, right?
Get some good spice. Putting a seed in the ground and then putting water on top of that seed.
That's what I'm hoping.
I could probably do
it. That is what I'm hoping, Alexi. Yeah. I'm hoping it is as simple as you say.
I reckon I've seen The Martian and what's that other one? That Interstellar and shit like that. I think that you'd struggle. You'd be trying to get manure going. You'd be trying to use your own shit to like keep the plants growing. They wouldn't be taking in the soil. I think you'd struggle up there, guys. I think you've got to be more realistic. Get into customer service or something. That's what I'd probably
do. Oh, yeah. I miss those days, my retail days. Just helping people out. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, man. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe. I actually think I could work in a shop. Like if it was a shop in space, like it was a space shop, I'd be like...
Yeah, not like a stupid normal Earth.
I mean, not to disrespect people who work in shops. You have a very valuable job, but it's just not a job I've ever aspired to. But if you put that job, that retail job in space, I'm like, yeah, okay. Like I do gigs at night. I work in my space shop during the day.
Yeah. I mean, I've done exactly that in the past. It's not so bad. Yeah.
I think as well, maybe for me, my niche is going like... because it's so far away, internet would probably be pretty not so good. Yeah. So people wouldn't have those streamies. If I take the collection up with me and open video store in space, plus my personal recommendations, I think would be my dream.
I like to imagine it's a world where there is no technology to be able to play your Blu-rays. There's no internet. So what you actually have to do is become this storyteller who tells the stories of the movies. So like every night we gather around and then you will tell us the story of the Beverly Hills Cop. Yeah. But like from start to finish.
So you're not going to believe this. Fletch is this guy who's a detective, but he is funny. And he's kind of tall, kind of going a little bit bald, combed over a little bit. Don't listen to what anyone else would describe him as. I'm telling you what he looks like.
Did you guys ever see...
getting confused and be like, then he's like playing golf and stuff and, you know, like...
adding different movies in. Not only he takes his family on a trip to a theme park.
They go the European style. They do a Christmas stuff, you know.
So you'll like this. My dad does not watch. So my dad watches like the ABC for the news. He listens to like the cricket, football, like the farming hour. They have this thing called the country hour on ABC radio. And so like that's like the show that he listens to. Does not watch any entertainment shows. He's only ever in his life watched The Flying Doctors and Blue Heelers are the only two like dramas that he has ever watched in his life. And I one day discovered that he did not realize they were different shows. He just thought at some stage the doctors had like stopped flying around and had become policemen or something. Like that's how little attention he pays. So you could easily put all Chevy Chase's movies in one movie and he'd be like, that sounds great. Perfect.
That would be amazing, just watching any piece of material and just going, yeah, they're all connected. Like I've got my world and then the world on the screen's all the same as well.
Well, you guys are familiar with that theory that all of Keanu Reeves' movies operate in the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
So, like, all the movies are just, like, simulations that he is going through within the Matrix. Have you heard of this?
I've been working on a recut of the Matrix, like, that when he goes into the Matrix, it's just Point Break. And just doing different scenes from Point Break whenever he jacks in.
But that's the theory, right? Like, is that each of those is training him for some specific thing within the Matrix. And so that's why in like John Wick, he's so hyper-realistic when it comes to, you know, the skills that he has and what he can do. It's because it's all a simulation in the Matrix.
Oh, I love this. Wow. I love this theory. I love to know the parenthood simulation is just him getting sucked off in Annette Bening's house. That's pretty cool. Or whoever it is.
Gotta learn how to do that.
It's actually Diane Wiest.
Sorry. You're right. I knew right away.
The inventor of the ice cream bars, famously.
What about the munch theory?
Oh my God. This is a theory I adore.
You know, well, you explain it for me then, Alexi, because I vaguely remember it. That it's that Richard Belzer, the comedian's character.
Yeah, Detective Munch, John Munch.
From Law and Order is in, what is it? How many shows
he's been in?
He's got the record for the most
the
shows.
The X-Files.
He starts in Homicide.
Homicide, Life on the Streets.
Arrested Development, X-Files, like you said. Law and Order, all of them pretty much.
The Wire. 30 Rock, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Sesame Street. And more, I'm pretty sure. So that's so that just goes to show that that is one world. When you turn on the TV, most of the time you're just watching one
and
universe.
Also introduces the idea that it could have been Big Bird and Munch on that show.
Oh my God. The greatest team up. One day freaking Ice-T is a bit sick. They're like, oh, we got another guy from the streets of New York to help you solve this crime today, Mr. Munch.
Maybe that's what they should have done if Big Bird died. They have Munch on the case.
Yeah.
He's allowed to, he knows Bird. He's worked with Bird.
I remember in my early days of like loving Munch because I was a Homicide, Life on the Streets and Law and Order fan in the early days. And I was like, the first time I saw him pop up in the X-Files, I was like, oh, hang on. Like, what is going on here? This is like amazing. And then I found out that he was a stand-up comedian. And I was like, I felt like this is the greatest career anyone's ever had in the history of showbiz.
I've been re-watching Law and Order SVU. I gotta tell you, I'm a Munch head. Like, I've got Munch madness, baby. I love him so much. But Richard Belzer, most fascinating guy ever. Like, because he's just, the only time I've ever seen him do stand-up is in Scarface.
Yeah, that's right, he's in Scarface too. In the club, bombing in front of Tony Montana.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. Fuck.
Yeah. Well, that is in The Joker when Gary Goldman's doing stand-up. And I remember watching The Joker, and when Gary Goldman's on stage and
the
it's cooler that way.
Sorry, Joker. No, the Joker movie. So I'm watching that and the last time that I saw Gary was when we went on Doug Benson's show, Getting Doug with High, which is the show where you go on and you smoke weed for an hour. And so it was me and Gary Goldman were the guests. And so
I call that show.
And we got This is a true story, but when I was going on that show, I was so paranoid that I would be embarrass Australia as a stoner that I literally trained for a week. I got like a bigger bong. I was like getting up in the morning and trying to like and rip and then talk and stuff because I didn't want to like go on the show and completely green out and embarrass my. It was my version of the Olympics. I was like,
that is so funny.
That's like so funny.
Like an athlete studying a tape of another team or whatever to figure out.
Well, I'd seen like Dan Harmon or someone on it and just get completely. Like too stoned and like get freaked out by the entire experience. Oh, and I was like, I do not want that to be me. That is not what I want.
Fuck.
Well, it's safe to say you did us proud,
Thank
brother.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. So Gary, that was the last time I saw Gary. And then I was like the most stoned I've ever been, you know, alongside the most stoned he's ever been. And then I just like, when I saw him in Joker, there was the real like flashback to that moment. I was like, this is, but, I don't know. I don't know what's real anymore.
I love that because he was doing one of his real bits.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they wrote a bit from the 70s for this character to be doing. It was like, just Gary Goldman doing a bit from the special that had come out 2 years ago.
It would have been great if they like really lent into that though. And he's like, the character comes out and he goes, so state abbreviations are pretty weird, and just does like 5.5 minutes of his bike.
6 minute bit. Oh man, I tell you, watching that movie in the cinema, I was like, you'd hate to go on after the fucking Joker.
Yeah.
You'd hate to follow Arthur Fleck, wouldn't you? Fucking
It's
hell.
Kind of... I think that's actually one of the like mistakes of the movie where the movie doesn't understand the world of stand-up comedy because absolutely if there was a character like him, he would murder a few MCs and other open micers before he like warmed up into his real...
Yeah.
Like, there'd just be a few people go missing, some MC who rolled his eyes after his performance would go missing...
There's a million of these guys in every open mic. I've seen hundreds of jokers over the years. None of them ever get booked at a real comedy club. Mm-hmm.
None of them have a clip that goes viral in the days before the internet.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that's a plot point.
It's one of the best, isn't it? That somehow imagine like if like Rove, when he was on, just saw somebody bomb at a stand-up club. I was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to play that on Rove and then get that guy on and embarrass him.
We've got the tape of little Alexi Toliopoulos trying a new bit out at his first ever gig and he eats it and now we're going to play it on WhatsApp.
Fucking hell, that's so funny. I forgot that's part of the movie.
Stand up in movies is like weird.
I talk about this a lot. We talk about this a lot. Yeah. I think it's been done well a couple of times. I really
Okay, so when was it done well?
It was done well in maybe not in a film but in the TV series Crashing, the Pete Holmes show on HBO. I like it in that because it's never anyone crushing. It's just club comedy. People are doing okay.
Yeah.
You can still hear people chatting or ordering drinks in the background. And there's a moment in that when he does this thing that I just fucking can't stand in any stand-up comedy film. This happens in all of them.
Yeah.
Where they're doing their act and then they just stop and take a moment and then just start talking about their real life.
Yeah.
They go, oh, so my wife left me. And all of a sudden, everyone in the crowd starts paying attention a little bit closer. Mm. And the comics up the back of the room
people
start
are like
going,
turning to each other. I recognize authenticity right now.
Yeah,
something authentic's happening right now.
He's doing it. He's finding his voice. There's a moment in Crashing where he does that, but he bombs even harder. He starts trying to be authentic and it goes nowhere. And then someone starts heckling him. And then after the show, all the comedians are like, why did you do that? Why didn't you just do your jokes?
Yeah.
And he's like, I was trying to be real. And they were like, but it wasn't funny. That was bad. Well, I loved that. I thought that was cool.
I got to agree with you. I think that's the realest moment because everyone's done that like once. I remember vividly one time like doing a show at one of like those little small showcase gigs at Sydney Comedy Festival. And I was really not doing well. Every joke I was doing wasn't working. It was like the smallest, worst audience. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to tell a story from my real life. I never bombed harder when I transitioned to doing that. And I bombed so hard that, like, I just remember sitting backstage just slumped up. And then it was such a bad bomb that months later, people that weren't there, because it was like five comedians there, the word traveled, so everyone knew about it. And it just kept coming back to me, going like, oh, man, I heard you bombed real hard. I'm like, how'd you know?
I saw it on what, though?
Rove really gave it to you last night.
I went a step further than that. So I did a show. So Amy, my partner, we've been together 20 years, but there's been some ons and offs in between. Sure. Not consecutive. And the first time we ever broke up, it was, you know, kind of maybe 6 weeks before the comedy festival started. So I was in a pretty bad and sad place and decided that I was going to, yeah, that's what the show was all going to be about. Mm. And I still get messages from people in Adelaide who have not come back to see me since that show. Like, who still find it almost a personal affront on them that I thought that was entertainment. And they are right. All I think is it eventually became an okay show. But, like, the first, like, maybe 4 or 5 weeks of it were just, it was not a comedy show. It was a guy going through a breakdown live on stage every single night. And it, like, I just look back on it and go, where were my management? Why wasn't somebody tapping me on the shoulder and going, mate, I'm not sure you're in the right place.
I feel so sorry for Adelaide, hey. Like, they must think stand-up comedy is just the shittest thing. Every year the comedy, like, Fringe Festival comes and they see people just fucking around with new material. Just unformed bullshit shows.
I know. It was so this year, Ballard got caught in New Zealand. I wasn't going to Adelaide because I didn't have a new show. And Ballard got caught in New Zealand and he had 4 nights or whatever that they needed to feel like a week out. Mm. And so they said, will you come down and, you know, just take those 4 shows? And so I went and did like 3 mm. illegals and 1 like of my improv show on those nights. And I thought I was like Richard Pryor or something, like Chris Rock, yeah. Like the way that I killed, because that audience has never seen me do something.
Oh my God. I feel so bad for them. I've only ever bombed in Adelaide, I swear to God. I've never had a good hour there.
I mean, it's like the whole city kind of needs to, you know, do something about it, because the truth of it is it's got nothing to do with the city of Adelaide. No, it has to do with what month that festival happens to be in the calendar, right? Move it to May.
Absolutely.
Or swap June, it around.
Right? Yeah, like, you guys can move it. The comedians aren't going to... We're not going to get our shit together.
No one's starting a class action.
The only way
action.
You can get a good show is move the Fringe to June.
I'd be happy to do it later in the year. I've done... I've been in a tent in that garden where all the shows are, and you can hear the fucking V8 going around. Wow. You can hear Keith Urban's band playing in the park across the road. It's horrible. What the fuck are we thinking? We've got to... I'm with you on this. We'll move it to June. That's what we're going to do.
I mean, that's because it is also the cliche of Adelaide at the time, which is they literally put everything on at the same time. You've got like the Arts Festival and you've got WOMAD and you've got the motor racing and you've got the Adelaide Cup and you've got like all these events that all happen at the same time. Just pull out the Fringe, move it to June. In fact, pull comedy out of the Fringe, which I think would make most of the Fringe acts happy anyway, and just do an Adelaide Comedy Festival in June. Get some good shows in.
All right, here's a question then. What's the worst stand-up comedy you've seen in a movie or TV? The worst represented of it.
Okay, so I was going to say the only other one that I think is good is, and again, it's connected to that Pete Holmes world, which is in Kumail and Emily's movie, Big Sick.
Yeah, that was good.
I thought the stand-up in that was pretty good as well, because they filmed it as if it was real stand-up. I thought it worked okay.
And I would say funny people in that same area, and it's all like the same people as well, like Judd Apatow has got his fingers in all of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, when I was growing up, punchlines felt...
yeah.
real. Like now that I'm in it, I understand that it's maybe not entirely accurate, but it felt real.
Well, when we were hanging out in the locker room the other day, Will, you were saying so much that Tom Hanks was a big inspiration for you.
It's my favorite bit about that movie, I think, is the comedy locker room.
It rocks.
I'm so disappointed that like not once in 25 years of doing stand-up comedy has anyone ever taken me into a comedy locker room.
I would say that one of the other ones, like different side of it, is the aforementioned Scarface, because it's like the weirdest venue. It's like a nightclub. No one is at all paying attention to what's going on when Richard Belzer is like hosting, as everyone's like doing drug deals and stuff like that in the audience. No one's paying attention. And then Richard Belzer has to bring on the weirdest act of all time, which is a fat clown with a paper mache head who just dances or something. And I've seen he destroys.
He destroys.
He levels the room. And then gets murdered. He gets murdered on stage.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Okay, I want to change my answer. That's the best representation of stand-up on film I've ever seen.
It's a very specific vibe of one of those shows. Like, why are they doing a stand-up show here? And this is the lineup? No one makes sense to each other.
There's a club in America called the Comedy and Magic Club at Hermosa Beach, which is a very well-respected American comedy club, but it's very, they have a certain, Hermosa Beach has a sort of family beachy vibe. They prefer you to work cleanish at the club. It's Jay Leno's home club. So it's where he famously would do like his, you know, show every single week. He would go down there and do like, you know, run his hour and a half or whatever it is. You'd always get some famous drop-ins. They would run these lineup shows and you'd get like big time acts coming in to try stuff because it was that sort of room. And but it's a comedy and magic club. And so they have had this long tradition that every show will have a magician. Oh. So there is always a magician on the lineup. And I loved it. I was like, I just loved the idea that I feel like we've forgotten that we are bedfellows, comedians. Yeah. Like, and you know, Cam, you know how much I love the greatest film trilogy in modern day. Now you see me.
Yeah.
Now you see me too. And the, of course, hotly anticipated trequel.
Yeah. Now you three me. Can't wait for it.
Now you three me. That's right.
So did you have to follow a magician, or is it just like a separate part of the show? How's it work?
No. You can absolutely follow the magician. And I don't mind following the magician. The magician, like post-magician, was a good slot, I always thought.
Really?
That's the sweet spot. I was also the person who was very happy to go on post the big name that had just dropped in. Like over there, there's a whole lot of people who'd be like, I don't want to go on. Like if Daniel Tosh came down and like, just tried 10 new minutes. Nobody wanted to go on after him. But I was always like, I love that spot because they're all paying attention. Yeah. There's a buzz in the room. Like if you can just hold on to it, you'll have a really good set. Like if you lose it, then you are a bit fucked. But if you can hold on to it.
There's a club in Sydney now that's a magic club that does stand-up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's run by a magician.
Mm.
And he books it, and now he books just pure comedy nights. So you can go down and like, you know, headline, middle, opener, and MC. But every now and then he'll jump up and he'll like a little bit of close-up magic or a little bit of patter and stuff. And he's the most amazing character. He's just fucking great. Everything about him is great. He's got old showbiz stories.
Oh.
He's a bit of a, like, you know, cheese ball. He's got dyed jet black hair. I just fucking love it.
My God.
I've come to realize that magic, I love it. I've loved watching it.
Do you know who Michael Pope is? Have we spoken about this? I don't know if we have. But Michael Pope is a famous Australian warm-up comedian, probably the most famous warm-up comedian of like the previous generation. Did the Logies for 20 years.
Wow.
Like, you know, the guy that everybody would go to in that scenario, Michael Pope was the guy. Still does.
On his website right now.
Still does warm-up all over the place, like, you know, for a whole bunch of big TV shows. Loveliest guy. Really like Michael Pope, and he's always the guy where if you're at something with the fucking hardest job, because particularly all those big variety shows or like award shows, they are terrible audiences, and he is just fucking doing his best to make sure that it is still a show. But he also is a mentalist and does close-up magic.
Wow.
That's sick.
And so a couple of years ago during the Melbourne Magic Festival, because there's a Melbourne Magic Festival.
Which Gates, they should move, by the way. I think they should move that to June.
And Gatesy from Tripod and I decided, because we like Michael, but also we just thought, oh, this will be fun. We'll get really, really stoned and we will go and, like, you know, see Michael Dewey's, like, close-up magic.
Yeah. Mm.
And there was a part of us that I think, I mean, not being cruel, but we were just kind of like, oh, this will be, like, hilarious even if it's bad, right?
Yeah,
of course. From the minute it started, I was loving it. Wow. I was like, I only want to see these shows. Like, I am so amazed by mentalism and close-up magic.
It's a true skill.
Keep doing it. Yeah.
Because it's like getting hustled in front of your eyes. Yeah. You're like, oh, wow.
That's what I love about it, is that you know it's a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's just a whole bunch of things that he's learned how to do. And that's what I love about it, is like, oh, look at all these. But more than that, I would love to go to open mic magic.
Oh,
if there was a night where you could see a whole bunch of people coming in and like just running trying in their tricks, that would be my favorite night of entertainment ever.
You got to get on like the 13-year-old birthday party circuit. That's where it all happens, I reckon.
Well, this one in Sydney, you should come down and do it sometime, Will. It's so funny. I went and watched the guy who runs it. He does a solo magic hour on Friday nights, I think. And Becky and I went and watched, similar to you. We were thinking we'll just get a bit drunk and kind of laugh at it. And then he did some trick right out of the gate where he made a card appear from behind Becky's head and it had her name written on it. And we just like lost it. I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, I could watch this guy forever.
Oh,
it's so much better than comedy.
Yeah, it's so much better. I forgot that I almost fucked up the show also.
Oh.
So there was some, we'd all been given a card when we came in.
Yeah.
And like there was a trick that involved us all looking at our card and like, you know, whoever having the card and whatever. And I was so stoned that I read my card wrong. And so I was the person and the joke, the kind of bit stopped because the person wasn't revealing themselves. And then I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm the person. I'm ruining this show.
He would have been so hurt by that. He's just on stage going like, God, I just lost a mate today.
It was fucking great though. I would love to know how to do some magic. Like, not enough that I will bother learning how to do some magic.
You wish it was an innate power, or you wish you had it. You wish you were magic, is what you're saying.
Yeah. You wish you were a wizard.
No, I don't. That's too much responsibility.
Oh, and okay.
Suddenly you've got all the ethical conundrums of how you use your witches. I just want to be able to hustle people.
Just
that's all.
Conjurer.
Stand up is like just the movie Rounders without the fucking cards. Like, all we are is a bunch of hustlers going town to town going, where's the game at? Can I please come down and talk for a while and hopefully walk away with some cash in my pocket? That's all it fucking is.
Yeah, man, I just want to be like Jason Statham at the start of Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, just three card Monty on a street. Watch this cup, and then I'm like, while I'm doing that, you guys are in the crowd stealing wallets from people's pockets. And I mean, I'm describing the plot of Now You Three Me, but we'll wait for that to come out.
I went and saw this guy who was, his whole thing was he was a debunker of like your John Edwards and all those sort of people.
Wow.
But he would do this show where he would say, look, everything that I'm going to do tonight, none of it is magic. It is all, you know, things that we are like, but he never tells you how he's doing any of it. He just like, his premise is this is all shit, you know, that I've just learned how to do. And then he does this thing that at the end of it, you walk away and you're with your friends going, no, he's magic. The thing he says at the start is clearly a fucking cover up from the fact that he is actually a magician, because the shit is just, you just sit there the whole time going, yeah, I know he said that there's a way that he could do this, but I don't know how he could do this.
There's no way. I'm a sucker for a debunker.
Like that Penn and Teller stuff.
Love that.
Love us.
Love that show. And there used to be a show on TV called The Masked Magician, where he was a guy and he would just reveal how they did sword tricks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's the dream. I want to do that for comedy.
I reckon you could do that.
Three,
I feel like that would actually be great. Like if you made a show, The Masked Comedian.
Yeah.
And you go on and you just go, well, look at that. That's just a callback. Like he's just saying the thing that he said at the start.
He's exaggerating.
Like it's not actually that clever. You guys find that clever, but it's not actually that clever.
Going through like old footy show clips. Yeah, so this is what he's doing here. It's a character.
So he's doing an impersonation of somebody and he's blackened his face. You see what he's done there? It's very funny stuff.
It's actually a throwback to minstrelry. Actually...
If you look carefully, it's just one guy and then the rest are just dummies on a couple of strings.
You know what? You think you enjoyed that, but they were playing a musical instrument and when at the end they stopped, you just clapped. It's a natural human reaction.
It's instinctual.
If you look back at the tape, like, you didn't actually laugh a lot during the song. You just clapped at the end because it was over.
Good grief.
I'm conscious of the fact that we should keep this tight today because, Cam, you have a...
I've got a pet of the vet. I actually probably should go.
Okay, well, let's wind this up then. Total Reboot is your podcast. People can also find Drago and also finding Desperado.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Both excellent podcasts that I highly recommend.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
and,
Will.
Thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's always nice to talk to you. Good luck with your Rudebot business.
We are looking for investors, so if you want to get in on the ground floor.
Exactly. We've been talking about movies on podcasts for generations, but it's time we do something a little more intimate with the format.
And Alexi's got 100 of the Rude Bots out the back. Never been touched. Never been opened. Still in the plastic abortement.
I'm really, really terrified of them. They intimidate me a lot.
But if you would like to put your banana in their tailpipe, then hey, we're done. See, that's how you do it. It's a callback, guys. That's all it was.
I just said
something that we said earlier. Masked singer. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.